Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, with a goal of donating 30,000 meals to the Good Shepherd Food Bank this November. Learn more at leeauto.com.
I'm Erwin Gratz. Now, some analysis of Maine's vote. I'm joined by our Maine Political Pulse experts, Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Gentlemen, good morning. I hope you got some rest last night.
Not a lot. Just a few hours.
All right, let's start at the top of the ticket. The presidential race, Joe Biden, good for at least 3 electoral votes from Maine. I guess that's not much of a surprise, Steve Missler, not based on the polling we were seeing.
No, Joe Biden performed as expected in Maine for the most part. The outstanding race here, of course, is in the 2nd Congressional District, where he is still behind President Donald Trump. But that's too close to call at the moment. It's not clear based on the national map, the electoral map, how whether or not the Maine 2nd Congressional District will even matter in the at the end of the day, just because there's other bigger states at play. And if Biden is able to carry those, then he could end up winning. But as expected, Biden did well statewide, and so he has at least the 3 electoral votes in his pocket. And he needs he's going to need all of those if he's going to, take the White House.
All right. Let's talk about it's, yeah. Okay.
It's pretty clear also, Erwin, when you look at the 2nd Congressional District, the public polling that was done did not capture that Trump surge in the last week or so. I mean, we were picking up some inklings of it from Republican operatives, but nothing solid, nothing, no data to go with it, that they were turning around some of these folks and bringing them back into the Trump fold. And that, of course, has helped Dale Crafts in the congressional district race, who did much better than the polling was showing him doing. Again, it goes to an issue that we've been hearing from some of the national analysts and pollsters, and that is they still haven't got it right when it comes to getting those rural votes that seem to be surging for Donald Trump across the country.
Now, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because the next race we want to talk about is the Senate race, mm-hmm. where the polling seemed to consistently show that Democrat Sarah Gideon was ahead by a few percentage points, but at the moment she's behind. And in fact, it looks like it's possible Republican Susan Collins will actually clear a majority, win her seat back without a ranked choice vote, Steve.
Right. I mean, it's a little bit too early to determine whether Senator Collins has achieved the outright majority. There's still quite a few votes out there to be counted. But the larger point you're making is correct, which is, the polling suggested that this was a dead heat. And even if this does go to a ranked choice voting runoff situation, I have to wonder if Senator Collins's margin is so wide at this point that it'll be a formality. That runoff would end up being a formality. I think it's mathematically possible that Sarah Gideon could come back if there's a runoff, given that there's a lot of Lisa Savage votes. I think she had, she's the other independent in the race, and she had about 5%, I think, statewide cumulatively. But still, I think the other thing I noticed too in the returns last night is that Sarah Gideon really underperformed as it relates to the presidential race in districts that she really needed to have wide margins. And she ended up winning a lot of places like Scarborough, Old Orchard Beach, Saco, York, but only by like 5 points, whereas Joe Biden carried those areas by 20 points, in some cases, 30 points. And she didn't win Lewiston, which is really key. Senator Collins carried Lewiston. And, again, Jared Golden, the Democrat in the 2nd Congressional District, won Lewiston handily, as did Joe Biden. Sarah Gideon lost there. And so there's evidence of underperformance or overperformance, if you're Senator Collins, perhaps, all over the map in places where, theoretically, the polls suggested that Sarah Gideon had a better chance of winning and winning big. And that is just not what happened last night. And so we'll see how it goes, but that's the story of that race at the moment.
And to your point, Erwin, when you start looking at the actual math in terms of raw votes as opposed to percentages, all the votes for the independents would have to go to Sarah Gideon for her to top and have an absolute win over Susan Collins, which is not very likely. It's possible, but it certainly isn't probable. So even if we go to ranked choice voting, it may still result in Susan Collins holding onto her seat.
Let me throw this out too. There was a late campaign ad that targeted Sarah Gideon. It was a woman looking very earnest directly into the camera and talking about a number of perceived failures by Gideon, including the Dylan Bates case, which we've talked about a couple of times before. And I wonder if that might not have had a significant impact in the last days of the campaign, Steve.
Well, what we do know, we don't have any data to support that, but my gut tells me that it had some sort of an impact. Not that ad specifically, which turned out to be used an actor that appeared in ads in other states, by the way. But regardless, Republicans and outside groups hammered the Dylan Bates controversy repeatedly. And I don't know if that was why a lot of women voters, we don't even know if this is exactly what happened, why women voters in some of these districts didn't go to Sarah Gideon, or if it was something else. I mean, there was also a lot of split ticket voters here. And, I've brought this up a couple of times in our podcast and certainly in the newsletter last week. But, there's always been the sense that there's a withering of split ticket voters. Maine has always been a state that's stood out because of its number of split ticket voters. And it appears that, that is a factor here too, that, maybe there are some folks out there that were uncomfortable with President Donald Trump. They thought Joe Biden was going to win. And then they were uncomfortable perhaps with Democrats having full control of Congress. And, I think there's certainly some voters out there that were thinking along those lines when they went to the polls. But to your point, I do believe that some of those ads, the Dylan Bates ads in particular, those ads were very, very devastating, I think, over the stretch. And there's a reason why they were run repeatedly. It's because I think Republicans picked up something in their internal polling that suggested that it was having an effect.
And gentlemen, one of the other things that, of course, was on the ballot yesterday was the legislature in the state of Maine. Mal, why don't you fill us in on what we know about how those votes went?
Well, the Democrats have retained majorities in both the Senate and the House. But of course, as there always is during these elections, there were some changes. Probably the most notable was the Republican floor leader in the Senate, Dana Dow, was defeated by a freshman Democratic state representative who basically outworked Dow in that district and flipped the seat. We have several seats that are still undecided, but it's clear that the Democrats have at least 20, 21 seats out of the 35 seats in the Senate, so they will control there. And also in the House of Representatives, the Republicans made some gains, particularly in some districts across central Maine, about a half dozen, pickup of about a half a dozen seats. But again, there's some seats that were so close, they're going to end up as recounts. So while the Democrats clearly have crossed that threshold of 76 of the 151 House seats to control the House of Representatives, what that final number is still up in the air. So we're going to go into the next session of the legislature about where we were before, with the Republicans having just a little bit more leverage than they had in the current session of the legislature.
Now, it's worth mentioning, too, one of the things that will be happening next year is reapportionment of the two congressional districts, and I believe, Mal, the legislative districts as well. And so this now looks like a process Democrats will get to control.
Process, though, is interesting in that it's done by an independent commission that, draws those lines. The legislature can reject it or accept it, and if they rejected, it goes to the Supreme Court to draw the lines. So reapportionment's one of those issues that's hanging out there, but we have to wait and see.
All right. I guess one of the other things that it might be worth talking about a little bit, we mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation a little bit, is polling. A lot of people, I'm sure, are going to once again be second guessing polling numbers that they see in advance of elections. Let's talk a little bit about that, Steve. What appear to be the limitations of polling, or did it work reasonably well this year?
No, I don't think it did, honestly. I mean, and you could see this all over the country, not just in Maine. And I think Mal touched on it at the beginning, which is that pollsters have just not been able to figure out how to reach these rural Trump voters in particular. They're just not capturing them. They even this year, because they got stung so bad in 2016, they even started to weight their polls to try to capture these people, meaning they were trying to represent them in their polling because they couldn't reach them on the phone or you know, via internet polling or whatever they're, you know, whatever combination they're doing these days. But even that weighting did not capture what they were doing. And you know, the Trump campaign was very open about what they wanted to do, and especially in the home stretch, and they wanted to turn out more voters than they did in 2016. And it looks like that strategy ended up working. You know, I don't know how effective it was in Maine, especially since Joe Biden won here, but it certainly could have had an effect in the second congressional district. But, you know, I think, again, there's going to be a big postmortem an awakening perhaps over polling. But at this point, we're just not there in terms of capturing the electorate. And, you know, I think this is also true in exit polling too. Some of this stuff we received yesterday before results, came out are not congruent with some of the results that we had statewide. And so, you know, I think we've always been taught to, you know, to take these things with a grain of salt. But I think these days you've got to do even more than that. It's a data point, a reference, but it should not guide our thinking on any of these elections at all.
One of the best explanations I've heard, Erwin, was actually on NPR earlier, where a Republican strategist was talking about the problem you have in rural America is that a lot of the pollsters have moved to this model that includes internet voting. And a lot of folks don't have the kind of internet access in rural communities that they do in urban or in the cities. And it's much more difficult to reach those folks based on the modeling. And he was suggesting maybe there needs to be a separate model that pollsters use in very rural areas, as opposed to their more general modeling, which is, I thought, a very interesting point.
Well, I always like to see elections as kind of snapshots of what people really think, very accurate snapshots, since unlike polling, we actually are hearing from real people and lots of them. Any final thoughts on messages that you read into the way the public has voted in this election in Maine?
I mean, I think my general takeaway from this is that, we hear a lot about polarization in the American electorate, and that's certainly the case in Maine. But, again, we saw a lot of ticket splitting last night, and I think that's a huge takeaway. That is not over in Maine. Despite the fact that it may be winnowing in some other parts of the country, it's still very prevalent in this state, and it's something to consider. And it may be the thing that puts Susan Collins over the top and gives her a fifth term.
And I think that Steve's pretty much right on target there. I think what we're seeing is that Maine's electorate is still staying more in the middle of the road that it's traditionally been in for decades. And that is, a lot of voters are moderate and they vote the individual. They look at the candidates individually, weigh the issues, and make up their decisions on a person by person basis, not the party. And at the national level, you're seeing both parties become far more polarized, saying, you know, you've got to toe the Democratic line or you've got to toe the Republican line. And in Maine, there's an awful lot of voters who are saying, no, we don't.
Well, Mal Leary, Steve Mistler, I want to thank you both very much for your time this morning. And a reminder that we talk to these gentlemen weekly on Maine's Political Pulse. That's a podcast that you can download wherever you get your podcasts, or you can find it and listen to it online at mainepublic.org. We do have excerpts of the Pulse that we run here on Morning Edition on Mondays, and you can hear most of the Pulse on Weekend Edition Sunday.